So today, on our schedule, we had to discuss compassion as one of the Brahma Viharas. So I made an introduction to the Brahma Viharas a couple weeks ago and talked particularly about metta. So I figured we'd talk about compassion tonight. So I have a very brief article from a recent, by Sharon Salzberg. And then I have a few words to say about compassion and metta, and then we'll do our little exercise.
Do you want to read?
Go ahead.
A Quiver of the Heart by Sharon Salzberg, published in Tricycle, Spring 2009.
Can you either have your closer to your mouth or a little bit higher?
Testing. Testing.
Yeah. Okay, that's good.
Not better.
Yeah.
Okay, real close. Compassion is known in Buddhist teaching as the quivering of the heart in response to pain or suffering. Finding the right relationship to pain, both ours and that of others, is very complex because pain can be a tremendously powerful teacher and an opening. It can also be the cause of terrible anger and separation. We can be filled with loneliness and resentment because we're in pain. We can feel very isolated because we're in pain. We can feel a lot of guilt in a state of grief, blaming ourselves for something we did or something we didn't do or something we didn't say. We can blame ourselves for seemingly being ineffectual in a world that needs so much help.
I'll bring the volume up.
Compassion allows us to use our own pain and the pain of others as a vehicle for connection. This is a delicate and profound path. We may be averse to seeing our own suffering because it tends to ignite a blaze of self-blame and regret. And we may be averse to seeing suffering in others because we find it unbearable or distasteful, or we find it threatening to our own happiness. All of these possible reactions to the suffering in the world make us want to turn away from life. In contrast, compassion manifests in us as the offering of kindness rather than withdrawal, because compassion is a state of mind that is itself open, abundant, and inclusive, that allows us to meet pain more directly. With direct seeing, we know that we are not alone in our suffering, and that no one need feel alone when in pain. Seeing our oneness is the beginning of our compassion, and allows us to reach beyond aversion and separation.
We can fool ourselves into thinking that we are feeling compassion, when in fact what we are feeling is fear. Perhaps we are afraid that we could never do enough, and so we prefer to do nothing. Perhaps we are afraid that our resolve will not see us through our efforts, and so we replace compassion with acquiescence. Perhaps we have slipped from compassion to hopelessness, and everything seems just way too much to deal with.
We might be afraid to take an action. We might be afraid to confront. We might be afraid to be forceful. We might be afraid to reach out. From the Buddhist perspective, lack of effort is lack of courage. But this is not an easy thing to see about oneself, so we prefer to think we're being kind or compassionate rather than simply afraid.
You're welcome to read more than a paragraph if you want. There is a second page.
We can fool ourselves into thinking we are feeling compassion, and yet we might actually be feeling guilt. We might feel if we see someone suffering while we ourselves are fairly happy, or are happy in a way that this person is not, that we in some way don't deserve our happiness. that is not quite the same as a sense of compassion. Guilt in Buddhist psychology is defined as a kind of self-hatred. It is another form of anger. There are times when we understand that we have acted unskillfully and we feel some concern and remorse. This can be important and healing. But a distinction needs to be made between such concern and guilt, which is a state of contraction, a state of endlessly going over things that we might have done or said. If we are motivated by guilt at what we feel, it will drain all of our energy. It does not give us the strength to reach out to help others. We ourselves take center stage when we are in a state of guilt.
Compassion is a practice of inclining the mind and of intention. Rather than laying a veneer of idealism on top of reality, we want to see quite nakedly all the different things that we feel and want and do for what they actually are. The mistake that most of us make at one time or another is to try to superimpose something else on that we are feeling. I mustn't feel fear, I must only feel compassion. Because after all, that is my resolve to feel compassion. So we might feel considerable fear or guilt, yet we're trying to deny it and to assert, I am not fearful because I am practicing loving kindness, and that's all I'm allowed to feel. The stability at the heart of compassion comes from wisdom or clear seeing. We don't have to struggle to be someone we're not, hating ourselves for our fears or our guilt.
One of the things that most nourishes true compassion is clarity. When we know what we are thinking and know what we are feeling. This clarity differentiates compassion from shallow martyrdom when we are only thinking of others and we are never caring about ourselves. This clarity differentiates compassion from what might be thought of as conventional kind of self-preoccupation when we care only about ourselves and not about others. The Buddha said at one point that if we truly loved ourselves, we would never harm another, because if we harm another, it is in some way diminishing who we are. It is taking away from rather than adding to our lives.
It is tempting to undertake a meditation practice or path of development with the same kind of clean motivation with which we might have undertaken anything else. Perhaps we feel empty inside. We feel bereft in some ways. We feel we are not good enough. And so we undertake spiritual practice to try to ameliorate all of that. But evolving a spiritual practice is not about having and giving. It is about being more and more compassionate towards ourselves and towards others. It is not about assuming a new self-image or manufacturing persona. It is about being compassionate naturally, out of what we see, out of what we understand. Compassion is like a mirror into which we can always look. It is like a stream that steadily carries us. It is like a cleansing fire that continually transforms us.
You can leave it all, I'll use it. All right, before I get started on my part, any thoughts or reflections on this? Kind of an interesting way to talk about compassion. I think it's interesting, as I've been studying the Brahma Viharas, I've been noticing how a lot of times when we talk about our difficulties with others, particularly with I'm thinking of when you think of people in the world that are causing great harm that you might resent feel anger toward or some frustration with, and people tend to say it's difficult to feel compassion for. And yet, I think from the Buddhist point of view, from the Brahmaviharas, it's more accurate to say, I find it difficult to feel goodwill for them. So it's really, compassion is about when goodwill meets suffering. And in some ways, compassion is a little easier. I mean, you see somebody suffer. I mean, there's very few of us that are going to be like, oh, good, he got sick. When somebody's obviously suffering, it's not a far cry for us to feel some compassion. But what's often difficult is when someone is doing harm or has done harm to us in the past and they don't seem to be suffering for it at all. They seem to be just fine, thank you very much. And to feel, we have a sense, in a way, if we feel goodwill toward this person, that we're going to be condoning their actions or, letting off the hook about whatever past things they might have done. So we kind of hold on to a resentment, thinking that what else are you going to do, right? You can't just feel goodwill towards someone who's doing great harm. And yet the Buddhist teaching is that we need to. That doesn't mean we don't, draw a line, lock them up if necessary, but we don't have to do it without a sense of hatred. So anyway, I talked about that on Sunday. So what I wanted to do and then talk about it was, compassion, goodwill, or metta, and what's the term for compassion?
Karuna?
Is that compassion or sympathetic? What's sympathetic joy? Upeka is equanimity. I don't know. Anyway, compassion, goodwill, and compassion. So there's these two different Brahmaviharas, and we're kind of going to bounce back and forth between them. And, metta is goodwill, and compassion is when that goodwill meets suffering. So the basic metta prayer, which some of you are probably familiar with in the terms of the metta practice, is when you, call someone to mind, and you're supposed to call someone to mind for whom it's fairly easy to feel goodwill. May you be free from fear and anxiety. May you be at ease. May you be happy. You try to feel it as you say it, perhaps silently. May you be free from fear and anxiety. May you be at ease. May you be happy. Now, part of the goodwill that we're feeling towards someone if they have done or are doing things that are harmful, part of that goodwill is hoping that they find their way out of being caught by greed, hate, and delusion, find their way out of their small-minded viewpoint, that they let go of the fear that is driving them, or whatever. Because the basic Buddhist view is that if someone is truly happy and at ease and free from fear and anxiety, they wouldn't act with harm toward other people. So it may look from afar like someone is doing just fine, but if they're causing harm, then they themselves are suffering. So part of the goodwill, part of the compassion, is hoping that they stop doing the things that are causing themselves and others suffering. So that's all worked in there. But we don't want to make our goodwill contingent.
you know, I found myself as I'm doing this practice and you call to mind more and more difficult people to naturally feel goodwill for. And I want to say, may you be free from, and may you be happy, really happy in a sense of true happiness, not the kind of happiness that you're after. Like, you know, like I have a commentary on this person and not just wish them true happiness, real happiness. So, for our exercise, which is always optional, but you might get kind of bored while we're doing it, is to call to mind someone who you find it very, very difficult to feel goodwill or compassion for. This can be a public figure or someone who has hurt you. You can name them or not, but I actually thought that this would be not exactly like that meta prayer that you just kind of do for your own sake, but this would be a prayer that you are making for them. So you can even kind of imagine that at some point they might read it. This is my prayer for you. May you, with some kind of, you know, goodwill, some kind of compassion for this person behind it. And it can be really short or a few sentences long. But in a sense, kind of wishing for them what you think would actually lead them to be a kind, wise person, which would be somebody who wasn't doing harm. You look confused, but feel free to ask for clarification. Or are you just kind of thinking of who you might write this to?
It's hard to think of things. I can think of two people, you know, a public figure, hard to think of goodwill towards.
Well, you could think of, you can wish, even if you can't sincerely write at this moment, feel goodwill for them. What do you wish, you know, in a perfect world, what would you wish for them that you think might lead them away from the harm that they're doing?
Be locked up in jail, is that a wish for them?
If you think that would really help, although I can't see that really converting the person's heart. That may be something, an action that we might need to take, but we wouldn't really be, we'd be taking that to protect others, not to convert this person. If that makes sense.
Can you say the prayer again?
So it's, may you be free from fear and anxiety. May you be at ease. May you be happy.
We're supposed to write that or our own version?
Your own version, specifically oriented towards this particular person. And then, if you don't want to share it, you can, but what I would think we would do is kind of throw them all into one receptacle and then each of us take one and read it out loud. So it's not going to be necessarily we're sharing, it's not going to be not obvious that it's our prayer. But
do we put the person's name on it?
If you want to. I think I will.
I mean, I have a meta prayer I do, I say.
Yeah, I'm thinking of one very specifically oriented toward this particular person. What do you wish for somebody for whom you may not even be able to feel goodwill at this point, but what could you imagine might lead to that scenario?
Microphone. hours reading.
Are you too close to it?
Am I reading?
Yeah, I figured we'll just go
around. Oh, okay. Okay, I think, let's see. Is that good, everybody?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Shall we put the person's name for whom this is addressed?
Yeah. If they wrote it down and left it on there, then they, that's okay.
Okay. Donald Trump.
What a surprise.
May you know peace. May your children's children live and grow in a world where all children can flourish. May the responsibilities that you find tiresome and burdensome be transferred to a person who is better equipped. May you receive the care that is fitting to your condition as you experience cognitive changes with aging. May people act in ways to prevent harm from arising from your actions. May you know peace and be free from suffering and the causes of suffering.
May you have an open heart. May you be loved. May you be happy. May you be free from harm.
This is also for our president. May you see our common humanity. May you feel love for everyone. May you be free of fear and greed. May you see the beauty of nature. May you be at peace.
May you know intimately the binds that hold you. May you be free.
This is for the President of the United States. May you discover true affection. May you feel deep satisfaction. May you feel honest respect.
I hope you will be able to one day slow down and view all that is around you. Truly take in all the wonderful and not so wonderful parts of life. Really get to know the people here and try to learn and understand their points of view. Life is short, and this might be your only one. How will people speak of you when you're gone?
Oops.
This doesn't say to whom it is addressed. May you not be a jerk. May you leave your fear behind. May you feel the love of family. May you be at ease with yourself.
Dear President Trump, may you know that you are complete and loved even when you aren't the center of attention. May you experience non-separation from all beings so that you can open your heart to all of them, no matter who they are or where they come from. May you learn the beauty of silence and reflection so your words and decisions can be skillful and beneficial.
May you truly feel complete. May you be who you deeply are. May you be filled with understanding and compassion for all.
I don't think there's a name associated with this. May you be free from fear and anxiety. May you be free of anger. May you be free of insecurity. May you deeply appreciate others. May you be kind towards others. May you help others be successful. May you be at peace.
Donald J. Trump. May you want safety from all danger and harm for all citizens of the world. May your guardianship bring you peace and mental happiness. May you open your heart to all beings.
Perhaps in terms of the way you put it, what they might truly need, maybe is the way you put it. What they might need sounded a little different than my thinking of what I thought they might need, which sounded more compassionate potentially and more understanding, and really required me to rethink that a little bit and take myself out of it. So I thought that was helpful suggestion.
I struggled a bit because one of the things I said was, may you have an open heart, or may your heart be open. And then I thought, well, what I thought was that implied that I didn't think the person had an open heart. And that didn't feel that was quite the purpose of this.
Well, but does the words don't, to me, suggest that? I mean, may your heart be open, and maybe it is open to some extent, but it's difficult, sometimes it's difficult to see if somebody's doing something that's overtly harmful from our point of view, like, their heart can't be that open, you know, like, you, at least from our view. So what we hope is, may your heart be even more open? Because I think if somebody, and maybe we're wrong about somebody that we think is terrible, either in our personal lives or in the world. Maybe we have assumptions about what they're like and who they are, and maybe their heart's more open than we realize, and there's something else going on.
Is that a little bit like the lion with the thorn in the paw? Just creates this thing, angry, until somebody comes along and says, oh, take the thorn out, and the paw feels better, and the lion says, oh, okay, I'm good now.
May whatever thorns may be stuck in your paw be removed.
Yeah, you know? That's a good one.
You know, it's just, yeah, it's, I mean, I understand it all, but it just,
because you, now.
I sort of resist it, and it's kind of like I shouldn't, but I do. And
well, it's kind of like Salzburg was saying, you know, we have to be compassionate with our own limitations and responses, but in that moment of wanting to withhold goodwill, I mean, just, you know, when you, I don't know, were you thinking of someone when you were trying to write this?
I was thinking of the same person. Yeah, I mean, and I wish I could have thought of somebody else.
But yeah.
Just like.
And I mean, do you relate to my thinking that like we want to kind of withhold the goodwill because we don't want to condone what somebody's doing?
Yeah.
I mean, do you have any other reasons for just kind of not wanting to go there?
I guess the bottom line was they're not deserving of my goodwill. I know it's very small-minded, but it just comes up.
No, thank you for sharing that. Like that's what our practice is about. It's just,
you know,
interesting.
I was gonna say, you know, if anybody that knows me very well would have seen the words I wrote to the President of the United States, they'd have been pretty shocked because I worked really, really hard to try to keep him from getting President of the United States. And I was just like, oh, and, you know, I can still remember election night. I was one of those people that was sitting in front of the TV and just like, and then, you know, you kind of have a hope that, well, maybe it's not going to be that bad. Maybe that was the behavior of getting elected. I don't know. And then it just continues on. And so, but it kind of reminded me of a middle school boy, like a middle school age boy. A lot of middle school age boys are very hard to love. You know, they can be like these toxic little, you know, not all of them. Some of them can be, you know, they're very immature.
Yeah.
And he kind of reminds me of a middle school boy who's never grown up, but unfortunately experienced some success, which got him well known, and somehow, that I still don't understand, became the president of the country. And so it's easier for me then to have goodwill and compassion on a middle school boy, because I think, I was like, maybe kind of like that at one point in my life. I'm probably going to grow up and go at it. But, you know, it's harder to do that for a grown man that's experienced success in life and everything. But obviously, he appears to function on this level of he just can't get enough attention, you know. And typically, if someone can't get enough attention, I always try to remember when I'm dealing with someone, I'm working with the end result of a whole bunch of things I have no idea about. So I try to hold on to that. It's been really hard to hold on to that with this situation because of the effect it can have. So, but after I wrote that, and I was like, I don't know how to write this. But I thought, well, you know what? I think if he truly, deeply experienced these things, I don't know what happened to that man in his childhood, in his formative years, I don't know. But if he truly experienced those things, maybe that would satisfy the very narcissistic seeming need of, you know, having everything directed at him and being appreciated for the great person he feels he is.
And I think, honestly, if I look out at the world, that, I mean, there's no reason to be idealistic about this. I think there are some people who are handicapped for one reason or another, and kind of no matter how much love and acceptance and kindness and whatever we could do for someone in this lifetime, they might still be stuck in middle school mind. I don't know, but then that can arouse our compassion. If someone, now, ideally somebody who is really handicapped doesn't get into a position of power where they can cause a lot of destruction, and so something needs to be done about that. But there can be a compassion, even when somebody might not actually be capable of this. That's why I kind of like the whole metaphor of multiple lifetimes. I'm completely agnostic about additional lifetimes or rebirth or anything. I'd be inclined toward the, I don't buy it, but what do I know, right? So, but there's something beautiful about that metaphor of just, it doesn't end in one lifetime. And why does a little child get born with all the weird tendencies and inclinations that they do? You know, it kind of like, sure, almost kind of seems like it's true. So, yeah, that's kind of sweet. I just think maybe they aren't going to get it in this lifetime, but in a future. I don't know. For me, it just, the teaching is that if we can cultivate, even a shred, build, even for moments, just feeling metta, feeling goodwill, feeling compassion for everyone, anyone, no matter what they've done, no matter who they are, that's what's recommended by Buddhism. And to me, what it feels like, because I've been very concerned, I do not want Buddhism to make me check out. I do not want Buddhism to make me just feel like, oh, well, universes come and go. I really was very, I did not want my outrage and concern and my desire for change to be decreased because of practice. So I've been on the lookout for that. But what it feels like to me is that when that can flow, I'm free of the burden of the hate and resentment. And I'm freed up to respond more clearly and more skillfully.
So the prayer is really to us.
It's getting our heart in the right. Well, yeah, we have to we have to really mean it in order for it to be effective, but yeah, it is not useful to carry. Yeah.
I like the term fierce compassion, mm-hmm. And compassion is not at all, as you're saying, passivity. And the analogy that really helps me is thinking about how I, as a parent, would behave with children that were acting out. And I had care for a 5-year-old who wasn't my own, but I was responsible for caring for him for a time, who had a lot of emotional things going on, who would, when he got upset, act out very physically and try to break and smash things, and I would need to restrain him from doing that. And I did that, and I did that with goodwill, because he was 5 years old. I understood the background that he came from. Mm-hmm. And not only did I not want my things smashed, I knew that it was not beneficial to him to allow him to smash the things. And it is not, in my view, it does not seem like it is beneficial to Donald Trump to be president of our country. He seems more unhappy than he's ever been. He complains about it all the time. So that's one point, is that compassion can mean, in my view, working to stop somebody from actively doing harm benefits the people that would be hurt by the harm doer, but it also benefits the person who would be causing harm. So that restraining somebody from in ways that you're able to do is a form of compassion.
And I loved how somebody wrote, I love the words, the may your grandchildren or your grandchildren's children live in a a livable planet or whatever. I was like, I mean, that's just the perfect thing. It's like, if he was able to meet them and see them suffering,
Can I read that?
Yeah.
Now, what's written here is, may your children's children live and grow in a world where all children can flourish.
Mm. Well, on Sunday, I don't know if some of you were here on Sunday, but I made the point that part of what we're supposed to do with the Buddhist teachings is wrestle with them. that's where our living practice is. There's our experience, and then there's the teachings, and we. That's why it's useful to expose ourselves and learn what the teachings are, and then we're like, yeah, but, and it's in that dialogue and that conversation that, that's where real insight and transformation ends up happening. Not just accepting the teachings and trying to abide by them because I'm a crappy person otherwise, but just a real sincere wrestling.
I guess just like my thoughts for that, like compassion is a lot like hope for me, and that it's not a feeling necessarily, but you know, like a practice. Like I don't necessarily feel hopeful all the time about like the situation in the world, but I'm willing to try to practice whatever that means.
Thank you all for coming.
Thank you.